Here it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put a great spotlight on the Southwest tonight. Thanks for joining us. I want to mention right up front that this show is made possible because of the support of Pima Association of Governments. They have lots of programs and initiatives that are really and truly outstanding examples of public-private partnerships. And they are, in my opinion, truly committed to continuous improvements to the quality of life in Pima County. And I must say that I have just learned that over the past years of being Mrs. Green and having so many people from PAG on the show sharing about what they're doing. My guest today, if you are a regular listener, you know who she is. Her name is Colleen Crowninshield. She is the program manager for Clean Cities Coalition and has her fingers in many sustainable pies, both here and around the country. If you've been a part of Mrs. Green's world, you know that she has been a frequent guest. And tonight, she's going to be wearing her electric vehicle hat. So welcome, Colleen.
Thank you.
We have lots of stuff to cover. So first of all, why don't we start with, Sheila will be so happy about this. Tell everyone who might not be aware of it, what is Pima Association of Governments?
Pima Association of Governments is the Council of Governments and the Metropolitan Planning Organization for the region. What that means is we work with every jurisdiction, whether it be Sahuarita, South Tucson, City of Tucson, Pima County. We do planning for everything that does not know jurisdictional bounds. Air quality doesn't know when it's gone from the town of Sahuarita into the city of South Tucson, transportation, watershed planning, everything that doesn't know when it crosses jurisdictional bounds. We help do planning for those things.
Animals do not know when they are crossing the road from Marana into Oro Valley.
No, they don't. And they can't read the signs. So we help plan where they go.
Stormwater, they say, not my problem. I'm running where I need to run. So that's a really good example. That's a great description. There are no boundaries that they are aware of. So they just go.
That's right.
Okay, then let's segue into what is Clean Cities.
Clean Cities is a public-private partnership run through the U.S. Department of Energy, helping us to reduce our dependence on petroleum. We do that through various ways. We help fleets convert to alternative fuels. We help bring fuels to the public use, like public gas stations. We help to encourage them and make it possible for them to offer alternatives. We help do planning for infrastructure for natural gas, propane, electric vehicles. So it's just a public-private partnership that we can work with the general public and fleets and businesses to help advance alternative fuels.
And it's under the U.S. Department of Energy. Is that how it's funded?
It's partially funded okay. By the U.S. Department of Energy.
Okay, so it's but
very partially, very minimally.
But we don't want to call them today because nobody would answer.
Nobody's there.
We can say that.
The lights are on, but nobody's home.
But nobody's home, and hopefully it's all as well, and we're just keeping our fingers crossed.
That's right.
I think these shows should mark history because we'll remember, oh, that's right, there was a government shutdown. So for this, we have to have a sense of humor, right?
You have to.
I didn't get political at all. I mean, every citizen I know is upset. So there you go.
Well, so are those of us whose programs are run that way.
No kidding. It's like, okay, let us pray for a resolution sooner than later.
Sooner than later.
So you wanted to talk today about electric vehicles. And one of the things that I was going to ask you, and we may be able to save this to the end of the show, but from the use of biodiesel, ethanol, compressed natural gas, propane, and electric vehicles, hybrids, and hydrogen vehicle technologies, Why did you pick to talk about electric vehicles today and electric vehicle infrastructure?
You know, there is so much going on right now with electric vehicles, and there's so many questions out there. I get calls and emails and people on the street even that want to talk about who's going to be building an electric vehicle. And then the big elephant in the room, is there infrastructure to support?
Where can I plug it in?
Where can I plug it in? And then what is the various types? People say, I've heard about level one, level two, level three. What's the difference?
It's really confusing for the consumer.
It's very confusing. And those of you who follow the media know that a big player in the infrastructure market just filed for bankruptcy. So where does that leave us in Pima County? And so I just thought it would be a good time to set the record straight and really explain to people what the infrastructure is, how we're going to proceed, and whose responsibility it is to proceed. So that's kind of where I wanted to kind of answer some questions for people.
And like one of I know as much as I could fill an entire thimble with what I know about electric vehicles, other than that you plug them in and that Bookman's has two EV charging stations. And I've heard presentations at your Clean Cities meetings where people have literally driven down from Phoenix and they are fine. Mm-hmm. So it's getting over fears, people's fears, and conquering their fears for people who want them.
With all types of alternative fuels, that's the biggest issue, is the range anxiety and conquering your fear. I have a lot of people say, you know, the first time I ever got on a bus, it was like, wow, I can do this. It's just that first time of doing it. And, you know, electric vehicles are no different. There is a lot that people need to understand, but really, if you want an electric vehicle, you buy an electric vehicle, you plug it in and you go. So it's pretty simple, as long as you understand the range of that vehicle and where you can and can't go. So that's, you know, that's really the big question from people is, first of all, right now on the market, you know, the Nissan Leaf and the Ford Focus, there's a pretty short range that those vehicles can go. So how are people going to get around in them? And then is there any major auto manufacturer out there who's building a vehicle that's going to have an extended range? So the answer is yes. And the answer to the first question is, we are building infrastructure throughout the United States using major interstates to help connect cities. And that's something that Clean Cities has been working with. We're not working with any one infrastructure company. There are many infrastructure companies out there that we're working with. And we're working with businesses, state agencies, anybody that wants to see the ease of using an electric vehicle become reality in the United States.
The other reality, which you have brought up on the show before, and it's been a while, is that most people aren't driving to Phoenix every day. They're driving around town. They're driving to work, parking their vehicle. There are lots of places now that I see, even in Phoenix, where if you're driving a vehicle like the Clarendon where I stay, they have two stations that you can go and charge your vehicle.
Absolutely.
So the average consumer is commuting to work, not commuting to Phoenix,
exactly,
which is 120 miles from Tucson.
Well, and the other thing that we've done to combat even that aspect is we're building what we call DC fast chargers to connect those cities. So in Casa Grande and Picacho Peak, we have a DC fast charger.
Is it near the Dairy Queen?
It is near the
kidding.
Dairy Queen. It is. Actually, that's been really popular. That's been a popular question, believe it or not. So it is near the Dairy Queen.
Because everybody knows that spot on the road.
That's exactly right. So DC fast chargers are what we're putting in place throughout interstates to connect major cities.
So what does that mean, a DC fast charger? Is that like supercharge in a hurry?
It's a supercharge in a hurry. So a level one is charging at home. All right. So you're going to go home, you're going to buy your Leaf, and you're going to go home with a 110 outlet, just like you would, you know, anything. And you're going to plug it in at home, or 220 really is the best, is to plug it in at a 220. Same thing as a washing machine or a dryer that you'd plug in. That's a level two or a level one. I'm sorry. A level two is commercial charging for supplemental charging. So it's not going to fully charge your vehicle, but you're going to plug it in. You're going to go inside Bookman's and you're going to spend half hour, 45 minutes looking around, buying what you need. And it's going to give you that extra boost to go get Johnny from school and pick up the dry clean and go home.
Right.
A DC fast charger will fully charge your vehicle between 89 and 96% in between 15 and 18 minutes.
You are kidding. No. That is a new technology since we started our partnership 6 years
Absolutely.
Ago. That's amazing.
So
it's supercharged.
That's exactly right. Just like getting that double shot of espresso at you know, wherever you like to get your coffee.
At 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
So that's really what it is. So, you know, that's not something that you want to do with an electric vehicle all the time. You don't want to make it a habit. But, you know, if you're trying to get from Tucson to Phoenix and Phoenix to Flagstaff, we're going to have these stations in between the major cities to connect those cities.
And word will spread, and people like the idea. I can tell from the meetings I've been to and being out in the community, they like the idea of bringing their car home and plugging it in if they could.
Absolutely.
So it's taking, allaying those fears. Now, in the myriad of programs in which you are involved, and I said that's so grammatically correct.
You did.
You have to advise people. That's part of what you do. So
correct.
Fleets come to you. We always talk about the golden child, golden eagle.
They are the
that
golden
converted
child.
To compressed natural gas. Mm-hmm. I finally got them on a show. When someone comes to you, I was wondering when I was preparing for the show, is your focus in your role at Clean Cities, is for the electric vehicles more a consumer focus, or is it still B2B? Do you want fleets to convert to electric, or are you looking more, is this more of a consumer-driven program?
So really, electric vehicles can be looked at both ways. We have a company here in Tucson called Reynolds Logistics. They're a runner company. And if you see a company downtown that's running legal documents from a lawyer to the, I don't know, to the city court or whatever, sure.
Pima County, yeah.
That's a perfect application for electric vehicles. And we have quite a few companies that are buying electric vehicles for those small commutes so that they can go back to the shop, plug it in, get their work done. Oh, got to take another run, unplug and go. That's the right application for an electric vehicle for a fleet. All right.
Okay.
So with a major fleet, you always want to look at where that fleet is going throughout the day. Do they come to a home base at night? And are they driving around all day, or are they going from point A to point B and stopping for a long period of time?
And you help with that assessment.
Absolutely.
I mean, you really guided Golden Eagle. They're a good example to use because they did the conversion.
Absolutely.
And they're still massively converting, and they picked compressed natural gas because they're on the road 24/7.
24/7.
So you assess all of that for a company and say, here's the bet. Now, Colleen, is there incentive? Is there motivation? Is it environmentally driven, or is it return on investment? What's the motivator?
It's
That's
both.
A great
okay.
Answer.
So return on investment is really important, especially when you're looking at a fleet, because when you've got a fleet the size of, say, Golden Eagle, you know, they can do what they think is important to be a good, you know, a good environmental steward in their community. But if it's going to cost them, you know, a huge amount of money and they're not going to make that money back, we can't expect them to do that.
And we want them to stay in business.
We want them to stay in business. So depending on the fuel, there is a return on investment for most alternative fueled vehicles. Now, for Golden Eagle, there is an incentive via a registration benefit. There's also an incentive via a tax rebate for per gallon of fuel.
Okay.
So what we do with fleets is we'll look at the fleet as a whole. We'll look at, do they register that fleet? Is it a private fleet or is it a municipality? You know, where are they going to be able to fuel? Golden Eagle actually built their own infrastructure on site. They also made it available to the public. And that's a big incentive for us in Clean Cities, because infrastructure is still the biggest impediment to alternative fuels of every kind. Is the infrastructure out there? And when you can have a company like Golden Eagle that's going to build that infrastructure and take on that debt, that initial debt, and know that over time they're going to have that return on investment, it's worth it for everybody. So
if someone's listening to the show and they own a business with numerous locations, multiple mm-hmm. locations, either here or in Phoenix or anywhere, because
sure.
they could contact you, how do you help them decide if it's financially viable for them? Because isn't there a cost if another Bookman's decides to put in an EV charging stations? How do you help them through that process?
What we do is we look at their fleet as a whole. We look at how many miles that fleet drives in a year. We look at the locations that fleet drives. And then we try to find out which one is going to be most worth their while. Is it going to be natural gas? Is it going to be propane? Is it going to be the easier fuels? And I say easier because biodiesel and ethanol, there isn't any conversion process. So, you know, we take all those things into account, and then we will move forward with our suggestions. Now, fleets don't always take our suggestion. A lot of times they'll come back and say, well, I know this is what you suggested, but this is really the route. And, you know, so then we'll change our focus and help them with whatever route they want to go. There are also grant opportunities for certain fleets and at certain times of the year. So, you know, we try to help them look to see what might be coming up for grant opportunities as well, because it can be quite expensive at times to convert to any type of alternative. So, you
know, if I'm a business owner that doesn't have a fleet, a retail is a good example.
Sure.
If I'm a retail store, would it be help me increase traffic now or in the future to say, well, here's my store, I sell this, and guess what, folks? I have an EV charging station. Is that
Absolutely.
One of the incentives for someone that doesn't operate a fleet that owns a business?
Yes, and that's where, you know, the Bookmans of the world come in. And Bob Oldfather has definitely said that he wants to make this a priority for him and his locations, because he looks at it as a benefit to the people who shop at his store. And we have a lot of people who have taken that route. If you go to a baseball game at Chase Field, there's EV infrastructure there. You know, a lot are just looking at infrastructure for electric vehicles as a way to bring in business. They're going to offer it, whereas their competitor is not. So absolutely, it's a huge perk for those business owners.
And part of what I believe as a businesswoman at the core of my being is that if there wasn't something down the road that will benefit businesses from a financial perspective, they wouldn't be doing it. And
absolutely.
I think that's great. That is not a criticism. It's like you want to have a good ROI so that you're a strong, healthy company, so that you hire employees, and oh, by the way, you're doing something great for the environment.
Exactly. So I have a lot of people who say that to me, you know, oh, they just want to make money. I can tell you that I work to make money to put food on the table.
Like, what's wrong with that?
I certainly don't work to, you know, because I love it. I mean, I love
right.
what I do,
right.
but
and your point is, that's what I say to
yeah,
people.
Yeah, you
and
all have to put food on the table. That's
right.
why we work. So,
and it's not egregious and outrageous. It's not like they're doing it like some companies you can point a finger at
sure.
when they're doing it on the backs of others. But for something like this, big business sees this coming. Now, I'm going to ask you this, and I, you know that I never put anybody on the spot on the air, so that is not my intention. But what if, let's just suppose in the Colleen Crown and Shield Clean Cities crystal ball, we hit a tipping point and 15,000 people bought electric vehicles in the next 2 weeks. Can the grid handle that load, Colleen?
Yes, and that is something we've worked very closely with Tucson Electric Power and up in Phoenix with APS. And yes, the grid can handle it. One of the things that we're doing is as we get what we call a bulk of vehicles in one area, we work with TEP to ensure that the grid is up to the standard it needs to be in that area. If it isn't, they will work on whatever grid technology they need to work on before we advance with, you know, I don't say allowing, that's not the right way to say it, but before we encourage people to purchase vehicles in those areas.
Right, it has to be an integrated approach.
And we're always really upfront and honest with those people, because the last thing I want to do is see a failure. I mean, I don't want to see, you know, us have the grid go down and
everybody
because of electric
vehicles.
Everybody
says it's Colleen's fault.
It's Colleen's fault. I can't blow dry my hair today. It's Colleen's fault.
That's right. And did you have anything to do with the government shutdown? I'm just kidding. Okay, so that's a really good thing to answer for the consumer.
Sure.
It's certainly a great partnership. And TEP, to me, is on the forefront of exploring every type of alternative they can and putting in the solar fields and their array. So they're developing it, and they've got a really good storage supply. But that brings up another benefit to me of when you're charging your vehicle, it's when people are asleep. So it's off-grid hours.
Off-grid hours.
Go on a budget plan with TEP,
absolutely,
it's not when it's peak time and you're going to be charged top dollar. It's off-peak use.
It's off-peak use. 80% of all vehicles are charged off-peak hours. So, you know, when they're using DC fast chargers, it's typically, you know, that's they're not all using it at once. So we're usually charging off-peak. And we do have a lot of people in southern Arizona whose homes are powered by solar, and that's how they're charging their vehicles. So, you know, there's a lot of really interesting ways that people have started to look at EV infrastructure and charging electric vehicles.
And in terms of the financial incentive for people, I have been so wrong about how fast I thought fuel prices were going to go up. And they're still kind of low. I thought they would be $5 to $5 a gallon by this time. I said it 2 years ago. Dead wrong, Mrs. Green. Sorry, it didn't go up. But I believe in the core of my being that fuel costs for gasoline will continue to rise. It's inevitable. So is there a big piece of financial education that you can share with people on if you invest in this charging station? Here's how much you can save right away, and here's Colleen's crystal ball about what
there
you
is.
Can experience.
There is. We work a lot with an organization called Argonne National Labs and the National Renewable Energy Lab.
Are they open? I'm just kidding.
They are. So each of them has information on their website on return on investment for electric vehicles and all types of alternatives, actually.
There's an app for that.
We're actually working with Google right now to put a Google app on for charging stations so people can find charging stations
really
throughout
matter.
The US. Absolutely.
That will really matter.
Absolutely. So, but we have worked with them, and the Energy Information Administration, EIA, actually has information on the return on investment for electric vehicles. But there's a gentleman here in town who is has been a longtime proponent of clean cities in general, and he owns a Nissan Leaf. He's owned it for a little more than 2 years. He bought the very first Nissan Leaf in Tucson, and he's a financial analyst. That's what he does in his, you know, for a living. And he tells everybody that it costs him about $200 a year to own and operate his Nissan Leaf.
You are kidding.
A year.
Say that again.
$200 a year to own and operate his Nissan Leaf.
Many, many, many people spend that in a month for gas.
I spend that.
Some people in a week.
And then some in a month.
So there is a real return on investment.
Absolutely.
That hits your budget every single month.
Absolutely.
How much, just give us a range for if someone's listening, how much, I mean, there are people listening, but if someone who's listening is interested, how much for a charging station to put in your home?
It's about $1,200. It's about $1,200.
It's not cost prohibitive.
No.
That is really not.
Now, that is assuming that the electricity in your home is up to standard.
That's another thing to bring up.
Because there are people who have homes that were built in the 1900s, early 1900s, 1920s and 30s, where they are going to have some electrical things that need to be done in their home before they can put a charging station in.
Well, even our house that was built in the 1990s, we would need additional capacity.
Some do and some don't. So I want to throw that out there because that could be an additional cost. But it's about $1,200 to $1,500, depending on the level that you want. I mean, some people want the Taj Mahal of charging stations. Some people just want a charging station. So
to keep it going. I mean, that's great. And it's so clean burning, which is, to me, of course, one of the most important things we need to think about
as
a planet.
Well, you know, a lot of people say, gee, you're replacing that with a coal-fired power plant. Well, typically, no. Most power plants now are becoming more and more reliant on natural gas. As well on solar. So, you know, we're starting to see coal backing away from with power plants. And, you know, you also have to look at the fact that EPA has very stringent air quality standards for power plants.
Rigorous, to which PAG is totally monitored and watching and really cares
about
Department of Environmental Quality, but they're
Absolutely.
Watching and they work in partnership. But that brings up another good point about electric vehicles, because people have brought that up to me. Mm-hmm. Aren't you using dirty coal to fuel your electric vehicle? Well, I'm not in the energy department, and I say, is it better to use gas in your car that is going to always 100% of the time pollute the air and it's not off peak? So use your, you know, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to.
Absolutely. And you know, we also have to look at the fact that we absolutely need to start reducing our dependence on petroleum.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you know, we're sending our money to countries that really don't particularly care for us.
Not at
all. So it'd be nice to start,
to say the
least, you know, using our own resources.
To keep it up, keep it made in the USA. I found so many things out about the textile industry, and boy, I am now looking at labels. Made in the USA is a really nice combination of words to me. Okay, let's switch gears for a minute, because I don't want to run out of time without talking about this. One of my favorite things to talk about, and we will put this up on Twitter
really closer to the time.
Sure.
And I have to remind my team about a Facebook post. I'll never forget the first time you were on your show and you talked about, I call it Turkey Day after Turkey Day, grief cycle.
Yes.
And never did I, do I think we threw our grief down the drain ever. It's just like we weren't raised that way. Put it in a can and contain it and then dispose of it. But people do.
Absolutely.
And then I have the stormwater people talking about what happens and as taxpayers, why we should care. So talk about grief cycle day and how that got started and some of the partners and...
So we...
It's a great story.
It is. We do an event called the Day After Thanksgiving Grease Recycle Event. It started 10 years ago. We started with...
Holy smokes.
It's been 10 years, I know. Hoisting grease for 10 years. But we started with a local company who was collecting grease to make biodiesel. And we started working with ADEQ at the border because so many people were throwing their grease down the drains there. And the Santa Cruz River runs north. And we were seeing a lot of grease coming up the Santa Cruz River. It started a huge education on throwing grease down the sewers and what it does, both, you know, sanitary sewer overflows, that's your tax dollars because you're now having to pay people overtime to go and clean out the sewer system, not to mention the poor guys that have to go down the sewer to clean it out with the cockroaches. Well,
which
that's a whole other story.
Really want to talk about
that. Yeah, yeah.
So maybe we'll do an on-scene investigation
someday. There you go. So what we do is we ask people, we have four locations all around town, and we ask people one day of the year, the day after Thanksgiving, to bring us their grease that they've either collected all year long.
And
or,
some people do that. You've told me that.
We have one little old lady that brings her Folgers can every year, and we dump the Folgers can and we give it back to her, and she collects her bacon grease all year long. So, and we make we give that to our two local grease recycling companies that make biodiesel out of that grease. So
it clogs your pipes.
It clogs your
own pipes. As a homeowner, people need to hear this and understand it.
It clogs your personal pipes, too.
Your personal pipes. That's a really good one.
It does.
It can cause raw sewage to back up into your home.
Absolutely.
Because people, seriously, don't throw your turkey grease down.
It's awful.
It's so thick.
Not a good idea.
You can count on it that if that happens, you'll be paying overtime to anybody that comes because it's holiday weekend.
Yes.
So you'll
yes.
be paying time and a half. How do you get the word out about this? And what kind of success have you experienced? It's a tough one to get people to know. Like every kid in school should go home with a flyer about this.
Boy, if we could do that, we would. Now, with social media, it's gotten a little easier. We do work with Pima County Wastewater now as well. And they actually will send, you'll be getting, when you get your wastewater bill and your water bill coming up, you'll get a little flyer about it. But really word of mouth. And we have collected, oh my gosh, I think last year it was 3,800 pounds of grease.
Oh my gosh, that's really
so
that's ill.
Now this year we've done...
What do you put it in? I'm always away the day after Thanksgiving.
We put it in big plastic tubs and we can watch it grow. The media loves to come out in the morning and see where
great
the grease
visual.
Is. And then come back in a few hours and see how much we've received. So they love to do that because it really is a good visual. But this year we added a component, and I'm pretty excited about it. At the O'Reilly site, between 9 and 10 in the morning, we're going to have firefighters there to meet with kids and talk with kids about the importance of keeping it out of the sewers. We're also going to do a Toys for Tots collection that day.
It's a great integrated approach.
Yeah.
And who doesn't want to go see a firefighter?
Oh, well, I'm excited. I know I'm excited.
Let's be honest here, okay? Maybe they'll be giving out some calendars too.
There you go.
Firefighters
are such heroes.
They are truly heroes. We make a joke, but boy, oh boy, are they in shape? Do they save lives? And they have to know how to do CPR and save you and go into,
And the kids love
utmost,
it.
Oh, kids.
Kids love to see firefighters.
There is not a boy or little girl alive that doesn't want to get on a fire truck.
That's exactly right.
So I can remember back that long. Okay, Colleen, very quickly, we got the 2-minute warning. It seemed like 5 minutes. How do people stay in contact with you if they have questions? How do they connect with you?
They can always connect via Facebook, Tucson Clean Cities Facebook. They can always go through Mrs. Green's World and connect with us. And they can also go on our website, www.pagnet.org under Clean Cities.
That's right. And if people are driving or whatever, remember it. Yes, you can contact me. Next week, focus on the future, insights on climate Yeah, climate adaptation. Jim Boozer, professor, Institute of the Environment, University of Arizona. And these shows, you guys, the Focus on the Future shows we've been doing with the U of A have knocked it out of the box. He's another faculty member at the Institute who is doing exciting things that are making a difference. Thanks for being a part of Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Connect with me at Mrs. Green's World on Facebook or at my website, mrsgreensworld.com. Colleen, thanks for all you do for the community.
Thank you.
And I hope GreenCycle Day is over the top.
All right.